U.S. government seizes 36 websites belonging to Iranian and regional news networks, including Press TV. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas vows continued support for defenders of Jerusalem al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque against the Israeli aggression. A human rights group says thousands of migrants stranded in Mexico due to a U.S. border policy have been kidnapped, raped, trafficked, or assaulted. Welcome. Our top story this hour, the United States government has seized 36 websites belonging to Iranian and regional news outlets, including Press TV. The U.S. Justice Department says three websites linked to Kataib Hezbollah, who are members of Iraq's popular mobilization units, were among the targeted media. Viewers trying to access the website see a message showing the domains are seized by the U.S. government. The statement cites U.S. sanctions laws for the seizure. The websites of Iran's Al-Alam and Yemen's Al-Masira TV channels are among the targeted outlets. Press TV has announced that its website will be available on .ir domain. Mr. Tim Anderson, Director for Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, joins us via Skype out of Sydney, Australia, to discuss this matter with us. Mr. Anderson, thank you for joining us. Tell us what you think about this move.
Thank you. Yes, this, on the one hand, is a terrible blow against the integrity of the shared internet, on the one hand. On the other hand, it shows that Washington is very deeply disturbed, particularly about the Iranian media, but also, let's remember, Yemen, Venezuela, there are other sites, some Canadian sites. A number of sites have been taken down, and so the U.S. is acting as though it is the owner of the internet and of a range of sites, and .com in particular, but also a number of other suffixes. So it's very concerned about its propaganda war, particularly in West Asia, where it's been running eight wars of aggression over the last two decades. It feels that it is suffering in some way, and that's why it's moved to this extraordinary measures.
What is it exactly suffering from?
It's suffering from a loss of credibility that it's presented successive wars of aggression, they're all wars of aggression, as somehow justified either on self-defense grounds or general protection grounds or humanitarian intervention grounds, but in reality they've all been joined together as a project to create this new Middle East that was announced in Israel 15 years ago.
Mr. Anderson, the reason why has also been cited as disinformation. I wonder what kind of disinformation is being talked about here.
Well, yes, it's there are two levels of justification of this. One is they are claiming they are moving against disinformation. Really, it means they're moving against media which oppose or have consistently run narratives distinct to the U.S. propaganda in backing these wars of aggression, particularly in West Asia. On the other hand, they also have a pretext which says that these organizations, for example, an organization called VeriSign, which is the main registrar of .com sites, is based in the U.S., although it's not a U.S. government organization, and it's registered lots of foreign organizations as .coms. The U.S. is now asserting, and it's not just now, of course they did a number last year too, there's well over 100 sites that they've destroyed, sabotaged, shut down, using the pretext that U.S. law sometimes designates, for example, the defense forces of Iran as terrorist groups, or they say they don't recognize the government of Venezuela and they will steal its assets. So they're using these unilateral coercive measures as a pretext, as well as the generalized pretext of acting against disinformation, which means information which is contrary to their propaganda war.
Mr. Anderson, do you think it works? As I'm pretty sure you're aware, it was about a year ago that the YouTube channel of Press TV was targeted. A few years back, it was targeted by Ofcom, taken off air in some countries, and right now you see the website. Do you think if the mandates by places and channels like Press TV was not done correctly, would they have been targeted the way they are today? And do you really think that it's working that way, you know, that they are being targeted?
Well, I think you're referring to the fact that the British regulator also took action against Iranian TV. Most of these measures, though, are coming from the US, and they're coming in a typically unilateral way. And they will find some pretext around it. For example, there's a Canadian website which had a .com, American Herald Tribune, which was claimed to be linked to Iran. That was blocked. They opened up with a .ca, a Canadian website, and that's been shut down now too. So I think the US will find some pretext directly or through its associates in different parts of the world to act in a very crude propaganda war, including by these means of sabotaging what had been, in a customary sense, a shared internet with relatively civil interregulatory rules.
Okay, many thanks. That's Mr. Tim Anderson, Director for Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies out of Sydney. I appreciate your time, sir. Incoming Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi says the preservation of dignity of the nation will form the cornerstone of his domestic and foreign policies.
The honor and dignity of the Iranian nation should not be tarnished in any talks or meetings. In our domestic and foreign policies, as well as while interacting with countries around the world, our pivot will be the preservation of the dignity of the Iranian nation.
Raisi was speaking at the shrine of Imam Reza, the 8th Shia Imam, in the city of Mashhad. It was his first public address since winning the 13th presidential election. President-elect vowed not to allow the violation of any of the nation's rights. He added his administration would pursue justice in various sectors, including economy, society, and education. Raisi said there would be no room for corruption in his administration. He said the mass coronavirus vaccination rollout would top his agenda to protect lives and boost the economy. Raisi further criticized the assessment of Iranian voters, I should say, in some Western countries. He said states proclaiming to advocate human rights should be held accountable for their failure to ensure the security of a democratic process. Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal are holding talks in Vienna as part of their efforts to revive the agreement. This, as the new Iranian government is believed to take a different approach with regards to the multilateral agreement. Yusuf Jalali reports.
In less than 2 months, Iran's president-elect Ebrahim Raisi will take over power, and speculations over the fate of the 2015 nuclear deal is now the talk of the town, while there are still major sticking points in the Vienna talks over the revival of the accord. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said the discussions are likely to reach a conclusion before the end of President Hassan Rouhani's term in mid-August.
There is a good possibility that we will reach an agreement before the end of our tenure.
In his weekly briefing, the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman said the U.S. is slowing down the process.
Iran and the U.S. still have differences over some of the issues. What's ahead is for the U.S. to make a political decision and lift the sanctions.
Reports coming out of Vienna suggest that the excessive demands of the U.S. and European parties to the deal are to blame for the sluggish talks. The U.S. wants the destruction of Iran's new generation centrifuges in exchange for only a temporary suspension of some of the anti-Iran sanctions, a demand beyond Iran's commitments under the accord. In his first presser as president-elect, Raisi made it clear that the U.S. must lift all sanctions before Tehran returns to its full compliance to the Atomic Accord. He said he will not allow the talks to become erosive.
The Americans violated the JCPOA and the Europeans did not comply with their commitments. The U.S. was obliged to remove all sanctions under the JCPOA, but it has failed to do so. The Americans should return and fulfill their commitments. I tell the Europeans not to be impacted by the pressure and the foreign policy of the Americans and to fulfill their obligations under the JCPOA.
Officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, the nuclear deal has been in limbo for 3 years, since the former U.S. administration discarded the accord in 2018 and reinstated sanctions on Iran. In a tit-for-tat, Tehran adopted a stepwise suspension of its own nuclear commitments. The last remedial step involved ramping up the purity level of enriched uranium to 60%, way above the 3.67% cap. set by the deal.
The Iranian Foreign Ministry hopes the Vienna talks will conclude before Rouhani's term is over. Observers say this scenario is the best for the U.S., and any foot dragging means the talks will have to continue with the new Iranian administration, which maintains a tougher tone toward the U.S. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Israeli settlers and forces have attacked Palestinian residents in the occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. Two Palestinians have been arrested as regime forces raided Palestinian homes. Since May, the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood has become the focal point of tensions after the regime handed out eviction orders to several Palestinian families there. Clashes ensued, with Israeli forces using heavy-handed tactics against Palestinian protesters in the occupied territories. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warns Israel against the continued blockade of the Gaza Strip and any hindrance to reconstruction efforts in the war-torn enclave. This came in a statement following a meeting of Palestinian resistance groups in Gaza. Hamas hailed the resistance of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, particularly the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, against Israel's land grab policies. The movement vowed continued support for defenders of Jerusalem al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, calling on Palestinian protesters to engage the whole West Bank in the struggle. Hamas said it is ready for all possible options and that the enemy will not be able to silence the Palestinians or hold them to ransom. Three Palestinian prisoners remain on hunger strike in an Israeli jail to protest their illegal detention without charge or trial under the so-called administrative detention. One of the hunger strikers has been transferred to hospital, but he insists to continue his strike until Israel releases him. Munah Kandil is in Ramallah.
A number of Palestinian prisoners are going on with an open-ended hunger strike to protest their illegal imprisonment without charge or trial under Israel's so-called administrative detention. At least three prisoners insist to continue their strike despite their seriously deteriorating condition until Israel releases them. Among them is 28-year-old Ghadanfar Abu Atwan, who has started his hunger strike almost 50 days ago. After starting his strike, Israel's prison authorities placed him in isolation. Later, he was transferred to Kaplan Medical Center south of Tel Aviv because of his serious illness, and he's being held there under detention.
Of course, when all doors are shut down in the face of the prisoners to get rid of the administrative detention, they have few means to protest and they have to engage in the hunger strike battle, especially that many prisoners' terms are renewed for several times and this without charge or trial. When Ghadanfar started his protest, he was beaten and tortured by the Israeli jailers and he was held in solitary confinement.
Palestinians held a protest in solidarity with the prisoners outside the Red Cross Committee building in Ramallah. The oldest of those taking part is 59-year-old, a senior leader of the Hamas movement, Jamal al-Tawil, joined in protest over the detention of his daughter, journalist Bushra al-Tawil. He's demanding Israeli authorities to release him and his daughter. Israeli court had extended Bushra's previous administrative detention order last March. There is also Sheikh Khadr Adnan, prominent leader of the jihad movement, whom is staging his fifth hunger strike. This is the 12th time he has been detained.
Today we are here not only to stand by the prisoners and support them. This is the least we can do against the administrative detention policy. Israel arrests people from all walks of life and different political spectrum. We are in real need to launch a national and worldwide campaign to force Israel to stop this policy that exposes the Israeli authorities and their illegal practices.
The Palestinian Prisoners Society said the Israeli authorities have lately increased the use of administrative detention against Palestinians. The committee said Israeli authorities issued 200 administrative detention orders since the beginning of May. The majority of the hunger-striking prisoners are those who are held arbitrarily under Israel's policy of administrative detention. That's why they put their lives on the line to demand not only their freedom, but an end to the administrative detention policy. Munah Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
The Russian president blames NATO's expansion into former Soviet bloc countries and ex-Soviet Baltic republics for the deteriorating security of the region. Vladimir Putin urged cooperation between Russia and the West while revisiting the collective lessons for Europe following the Second World War, Putin said the end of the Cold War could have been a common victory for Europe, but NATO's actions have diminished hopes for a continent without dividing lines. Russian leader also noted that European security has degraded significantly, tensions are rising, and risks of a new arms race are becoming a reality. He insisted that Russia is in favor of restoring a comprehensive partnership with Europe. A Democratic-backed piece of legislation on voting overhaul fails to advance through the U.S. Senate. The bill received 50 votes, all from the Democrats, but fell short of the 60 votes required to open a debate on the matter in the 100-member U.S. Senate. Democratic senators believe the legislation was necessary to protect and expand voting rights and counter state-level moves to restrict voters. Republicans, however, describe the bill as a power grab attempt by the federal government. Over a dozen Republican majority states have introduced laws that restrict absentee and in-mail voting. Former President Donald Trump refused to concede defeat, citing alleged voter fraud after the final results showed a record number of Americans had voted by mail. A human rights group says thousands of migrants stranded in Mexico due to a U.S. border policy have been kidnapped, raped, trafficked, or assaulted. This is according to Human Rights First, a New York-based group that documents cases of migrants and asylum seekers stuck in Mexico since President Biden took office in January. It says the number of cases has recently hiked from some 500 such incidents logged in April to 3,300 by mid-June. During Biden's five-month tenure, more than 400,000 migrants detained at or near the border have been expelled. The Biden administration argues the move is aimed at limiting the spread of the coronavirus despite opposition from health experts. That's it for me.
A diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight. COVID cases in the United Kingdom have been rising in recent weeks as a result of partial easing of restrictions, together with the growth of the Delta variant of the virus. We have prepared for you an article written jointly by Nicola Davis and Jessica Elgott. The piece is titled UK Reports About 10,000 COVID Cases on Day Before Lockdown Was Due to End. The article has been taken from the British newspaper The Guardian. More than 9,200 COVID cases were reported in the United Kingdom on Sunday, 20th of June, the day before it was originally planned that all remaining COVID restrictions in England would be lifted. It came as figures revealed that more than 1 million COVID jabs were booked in 2 days following the invitation on Friday for all adults in England to come forward for vaccination. COVID cases in the United Kingdom have been rising in recent weeks as a result of partial easing of restrictions, together with the growth of the Delta variant of the virus. On Friday, Public Health England revealed cases of the Delta variant of the virus had increased by 79% in the space of a week, and it is now believed to account for 99% of new COVID cases. The number of patients in hospital in the United Kingdom has also been increasing, albeit by far less than would have been expected without the vaccination program. The number reached 1,316 on Thursday, 17th of June, the highest since the end of April. The Delta variant is not only more transmissible than the Alpha variant, which previously dominated, but may also be linked to a greater risk of hospitalization and is believed to be somewhat more resistant to COVID jabs, particularly after one dose of the vaccine. The situation led Prime Minister Boris Johnson to delay the final easing of lockdown restrictions in England, pushing it back from 21st of June to a possible date of 19th of July, not least because the postponement will allow more people to receive their second vaccine dose. Sunday's figure for new cases of 9,284 in the United Kingdom was down from 11,007 on Thursday, 17th of June. This was the highest figure since 19th of February this year. Surge testing, which has been used in hard-hit areas such as Bolton, Lancashire, has been expanded to other areas of fast Delta variant spread, including Lancashire and Cheshire West, where it was rolled out earlier this month. On Saturday, 19th of June, surge testing was also announced for parts of South London and also in Cumbria. NHS England has said 1,008,472 appointments for COVID jabs were booked over Friday, 18th of June, and Saturday, 19th of June, following the announcement that all adults in England can now receive the vaccine. The figure is likely an underestimate, as it does not include appointments made with GPs or those who had the jab at walk-in centres, such as the pop-up vaccination centre at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London, which opened for the day on Sunday. Dr. Susan Hopkins, Chief Medical Advisor for NHS Test and Trace and Deputy Director of Public Health England's National Infection Service, said the United Kingdom was seeing the impact of vaccination in key infection hotspots, but infections were rising in other areas. She told BBC's Andrew Marshall, "We are definitely seeing some signals in some areas of cases slowing down. Bolton, for example, has definitely reversed. Blackburn and Darwin have stabilised." She added, "But there are other parts of the country, particularly in some parts of the North East, some parts of London, that are still rising quite fast." She noted, "So I think this is not all doing the same thing all over the country. And we're seeing rises and falls as people go out and get tested, and I think we're seeing the impact of vaccination." Dr. Susan Hopkins's comments echo those from the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Andy Burnham, who pointed to a recent decrease in case numbers in Bolton, adding the same could happen in the rest of his region. Andy Burnham said, "I think we're coming through this. I think we now need to be careful and proportionate in terms of the way we manage things going forward." As of 15th of June, Bolton had a 7-day case rate per 100,000 population of 269.2, down from a peak of 452.8 on 21st of May. By contrast, seven-day case rates in Manchester rose from 63.1 per 100,000 population on 21st of May to 339.7 per 100,000 population on 15th of June, making it one of the worst hit areas at present. While the current picture is mixed around the United Kingdom, experts have warned the country could be in for a difficult winter. Dr. Susan Hopkins said the future situation remains unclear. She said, "We may have to do further lockdowns this winter. I can't predict the future. It really depends on whether the hospitals start to become overwhelmed at some point." She added, "But I think we will have alternative ways to manage this, through vaccination, through antivirals, through drugs, through testing, and we didn't have that last winter." She also said people who have had two jabs may not need to quarantine. She said, "I'm not sure when, but a time in the future I can imagine a situation where we will have alternatives to isolation for people who have two doses of the vaccine."
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and since today is the auspicious 11th of Zilqa'da, the birthday anniversary of the Prophet's 8th infallible heir, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Riza, peace be upon him, let us contemplate on one of his sayings on the blessings of the presence of the divinely ordained Imam in society. The Imam is a kind of father, a helper, brother, a compassionate mother to a minor child, and a refuge for servants in severe calamities.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم امر الله سبحانه الا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's to my brother, and I'm your host, Mahdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: كل معاجل يسأل الإنذار، وكل مؤجل يتعلل بالتسويف.
Imam Ali said, "He whom death overtakes early seeks time, while he whose death is deferred puts forth excuses for the postponement of doing good actions." Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Dear friends, one of the great lessons which we learn from the truly universal persona of Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him, is the power of faith. So it's very interesting, but we find that one of the esteemed wives of the Holy Prophet, Umm Salama, has been quoted as saying, "One day the Messenger of Allah was in my house. Jibra'il, Gabriel, came down speaking to him for some time. While Gabriel was speaking with him, the Messenger of Allah was smiling. After the meeting had ended, I said, 'O Messenger of Allah, may my parents be ransom for you. What was the reason for your smiling and rejoicing?' The Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam said, 'Gabriel, Jibra'il, has informed me that when he was coming to me, he had seen Ali grazing his camels, and because he became tired, he laid down on the ground, and since he had gone to sleep, the cover that he had put on himself had fallen to the side, and half of his body was exposed to the sun. And so I, Jibra'il, went and put the cover back on his body. And when I did this, I felt that Ali's strong faith had penetrated my heart." Very amazing, very simple, very beautiful. One of these sayings that we find regarding Imam Ali alayhi salam, that faith is indeed something which is very powerful. So, dear friends, never underestimate your faith. Always believe in the power of faith, the power of Iman. In this story about Imam Ali, we find that his faith
was so strong that even permeated, diffused, it was transferred. Jibrail could feel the faith of Imam Ali. Never doubt yourselves, dear friends. Never underestimate yourselves. You are truly more powerful than you can ever imagine. A profound and beautiful lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib this means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
You for the protection on the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil. And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger. Ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks, so they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. And I ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I'm Attar, the producer of the program, to my brother. And at this moment, I invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Fayyaz Jafar. I hope you enjoy it.
And when we go towards seeing the instruction of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam toward Malik al-Ashtar, amongst the main themes and advices that he gives them in terms of being a leader is telling him, O Malik, know that you have a responsibility where people have to be receptive to you. And if people love you, they're going to follow whatever you have to say. But if people don't love you, well, they're going to write a lot of mean emails about you. Another piece of advice given by Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam toward Malik al-Ashtar, he says, O Malik, in the same way that you look at leaders, people will look at you. What do you mean, O Amir al-Mu'mineen? In the same way that you scrutinize leaders, you scrutinize people who take positions on the member, giving talks, reciting poetry, taking positions of community leadership, whatever it might be, know that people will scrutinize you. And the same way that you speak about leaders, people are going to speak about you. So get ready for all of the bad things that you're about to hear from people. But at the same time, know that you don't want anyone to use that sort of language and use that sort of rhetoric. So be two steps ahead. In reality, Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salatu wasalam demonstrates such concern for Malik al-Ashtar. Why? Because again, if we take a look at it from the context of Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam, who was more scrutinized than Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi? Every walk, every word, every step of the Imam alayhi salatu wasalam, he had Muawiyah from one side, he had these guys from the other side, he had a third group from the other side, watching his every step. And he's trying to tell Malik al-Ashtar, oh Malik, know that in the same way that you look at people or that you looked at people, people are going to look at you. So when you assume the position of responsibility, then be careful the way that you speak and be careful the way that you dress and be careful the way that you converse with people. And every single movement of yours, everyone is going to observe. Just because of the throne or the chair that you're sitting on, just because of the garb that you're wearing, and every single misstep that you make might potentially be a problem for you. And in reality, we see that in reality, every single day, we do the same exact thing. We as people within our own communities, but in reality, that's exactly what people, in terms of their essential nature, do.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
the light.
Elders in an Indonesian town are rewarded with live chickens if they get vaccinated for COVID-19. Officials in a town of Sipanas launched the program after the vaccination campaign faced a low turnout from the public. Many have been reluctant to receive a jab over various reasons. Some say they were afraid they would die if they get vaccinated. Now it seems that the rewards they take have worked well, and more people are willing to get a shot. Officials in the Indonesian town say they go door to door to give the elderly jabs and chickens to show their appreciation.
Over 300 classic vehicles have taken part in a retro rally across Estonia. The 1,000-kilometer rally kicked off in the town of Paide. It drew participants from Latvia and Finland. Their motto is Straight Ahead to the Past. The vintage cars participated in the event are mostly produced between 1930 and 1980. Experts say all the vehicles are in good condition. However, they doubt if all the vehicles can make it to the end of the five-day rally. A Palestinian artist has come up with the idea of making children feel happy after the recent Israeli aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip left many people dead. Amna Sami is a young Palestinian artist who has gathered Palestinian kids in the city of Beit Lahia, north of Gaza. That's where houses were destroyed by Israeli airstrikes and bombings during the recent aggression on the territory. Sami draws the Palestinian flag as well as the map of Palestine on children's cheeks as patriotic symbols. She says she does that to say that these people in the midst of destruction will become strong again. Sami says by painting on kids' faces, she wants to send a message to the world.
I'm sending a message to the world that our children should live like other children in the world, away from danger and destruction. It is their right in life to live as children in a safe place, a place that gives them something to live a normal life.
Palestinian kids say they feel happy when Sami paints their faces. The Israeli regime launched its devastating onslaught on Gaza in early May. At least 256 Palestinians, including 66 children, were killed during the 11-day war. A Turkish band has found musical inspiration in a most unlikely place, a local landfill. Here's more. Members of Funk Istanbul have assembled instruments from the dump in a junkyard in Istanbul. They use their ingenious new tools to play Turkish folk music. The band aims to raise awareness about recycling. Turkey is one of the biggest producers of municipal waste globally. The country has a low recycling rate. Only 12% of waste is repurposed there.
Technology has come in handy to rescue animals in disaster zones. American cinematographer Douglas Thron has used a high-tech infrared drone to save animals from fire or storm, or even those who are stuck in trees. The drone he uses has a large thermal camera, a spotlight, and zoom lens. The good point is that the aerial vehicle does not make too much noise. Therefore, it does not scare away animals.
So what I do is I fly infrared drones primarily at night over disaster areas after a hurricane or a fire hits, and I look for people's pets, whether it be cats or dogs, and I also look for injured wildlife, and then either I or rescue crews will go in and rescue the animals after I spot the animals after these natural disasters.
Thron has so far rescued hundreds of stranded animals in various places in the US and Australia. Emergency services have allowed him to participate in rescue efforts after making sure that the drone works well to achieve its goal. A video has gone viral showing animals at a U.S. zoo enjoying their bath time becoming clean as a new pimp. Keepers at Chicago's Brookfield Zoo washed the animals to celebrate International Bath Day. From anteaters to rhinos all got sprayed with a water hose. They seemed to love their bath time as it kept them cool in the summer heat. Zoo officials say the occasion is to honor ancient Greek scientist Archimedes, who made a discovery while in the bath. You might be pleased to know life is going back to normal as countries around the world are easing coronavirus restrictions. Disneyland in the French capital, Paris, is saying bonjour to visitors once again with all necessary precautions. Bet everyone missed that. The theme park reopened its doors to the public with limited tickets and an online reservation system. All visitors over 6 years old are required to wear face masks and to observe social distancing guidelines. New attractions, including a hotel and various car rides, are also available for guests. Disneyland Paris was shut for over 7 months due to rising COVID-19 infections. This is the first time since January 2020 that all the six Disney resorts are open. Children have their own ways of remembering the dead. In Gaza, Palestinian kids fly kites in memory of their peers who lost their lives in the recent Israeli onslaught. Dozens of kids participated in the event, holding kites bearing the pictures of 66 little victims. According to the organizers, the goal was to send a message to people around the world that Palestinian kids have the right to live a free and happy life. The children said their dream is to fly in the sky without any restrictions or wars. A herd of wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only 5. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping, pushing palm, and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she has inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongking village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years. go to Italy, where Mount Etna has put on an eye-catching show with its spectacular eruptions. Red-hot lava fountains and plumes of smoke spewed up into the sky. The main eruption was located at the southeastern crater of the volcano. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest active volcano. It's located above the Sicilian town of Catania. It often erupts but rarely causes damage. However, nearby residents have to deal with ash showers. Geological studies show that Mount Etna has been active for more than 2 million years now. Egypt has opened its first archaeological replica factory in an attempt to promote its culture worldwide. The factory was inaugurated in response to people's demand for having detailed copies of ancient treasures. So far, over 6,400 high-quality replicas of ancient Egyptian artifacts have been produced. More than 150 artists work to make the goods out of stone, wood, and even gold.
The materials with which these are made are high quality. The highest and most elegant materials are being used to make these samples, and the materials are very close to those used to make the original artifacts.
The models have certificates showing that they are identical copies of the original artifacts. Each replica also has a barcode that provides extra information about the item. The factory is located in Kalyuba, about 35 kilometers northeast of the capital, Cairo.
Now, a lot of people don't like rats and find them disgusting most of the time. However, the rodents are doing life-saving work in Cambodia. Now, the Southeast Asian nation has deployed a new squad of African giant pouched rats to sniff out old landmines. The new recruits have shown an exceptional ability at their task, with their handlers claiming 100% accuracy. There are now nearly 50 demining rats working in the field in Cambodia. The country started using the animal services in 2016, and they have helped detect and clear hundreds of landmines since. Last year, an especially heroic rat called Magawa attracted global fame after receiving a gold medal for his work. The hero rat, who is now retired, detected over 71 landmines.
A muralist from Greece is blending mythology with graffiti and street art to depict how COVID-19 has impacted lives around the globe. Ficus Antonius has painted the walls of many cities around the globe. He is now in the Cypriot capital, Nicosia, to continue his work. His latest artwork depicts Americus, a Cypriot mythical figure who was punished by the gods and turned into a plant. The Greek artist believes this theme is similar to the situation people around the globe have experienced since the pandemic began. He explains many people have grown roots because they're staying in one place for so long. Two British artists have brought a combination of fun art and environmental concerns to the sidelines of the G7 summit. They have created a modern-day version of famous sculpture carved into America's Mount Rushmore. This time, it's called Mount Recyclemore. Joe Rush and Alex Rakic have made a sculpture of G7 leaders with electronic waste. They say their major goal is to raise awareness about the amount of unrecycled tech and gadgets, the damage they cause to the environment, and the ways to combat the issue internationally.